All right, here we are.
Here we are. Welcome back.
Welcome
Science
back.
in between. Look at us.
Look at us. Yeah,
we're here.
This is Scott here.
This is Ollie over here.
Over there.
Over there.
Yeah, over Demdare Hills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Separated by, you know, just a, you know, what is it, like 100 miles? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. Just like that.
Just like that. So yeah, here we are. It's actually not that you would know this, dear listener, but it's been a little while since we've been able to record because there's been some travel and stuff. So we are not, we're a little behind in catching up with each other. So
So I haven't seen your face or heard your voice in quite a while.
Yeah.
So this is like,
That's right.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the reasons that we haven't seen each other is I was away at a conference. In our national, or mine, I don't know, it's not really Ollie's anymore.
No.
My national conference, which is NARST, which used to stand for something and now doesn't anymore.
It doesn't stand for anything?
Well, I mean,
it's the worst. If it's not going to stand for anything, then change the name, because it's like NARST.
The
It is
problem
like
is it's
such
got
an off...
history.
Oh gosh, tradition.
Well, no, it's more, it's not tradition, it's branding, right? I mean, I think that's the problem. So, you know, it is now NARST, a global organization for improving science education through research.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's make a really bad acronym worse.
Well,
Cool.
I don't know about that, but the main problem was the global part. And so we struggled. I've just finished my service as a board member for this organization, so I'm done with that bit. But
Is it the national? Because
yeah,
the N stands for national.
The N stands used to stand for National Association for Research on Science Teaching, and then as we have tried to move it to be a more international organization, we couldn't. You know, NARST doesn't sound
How about
great.
just ARST, the association?
I think just saying it out loud, you probably got a good reason for why.
ARST.
I mean, if you're in England and you say that, it's not a good thing. That's
All
all I'm
right.
saying. So anyway, but I was gone for a bit, and so, you know, we have been incommunicado.
Except for a text here and there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not completely incommunicado, but not sitting and looking at each other in the face.
Not like this.
And talking about stuff. Yeah.
So
we have
some stuff to talk about, though. We have like
we
some.
do.
Yes.
We do have stuff to talk about. And the first thing we're going to try and talk about today, and we'll see how this goes, is a discussion about peer review. And this has come up for me for another reason, which is that looks like I'm going to be editor of a journal here soon, and
what journal is that? Can you share?
Yeah, it's Science Education.
Okay.
So that is one of the two, arguably two premier journals in our field. So the Journal of Research on Science Teaching, which is associated with NARST, and then Science Education are the two big American, at least, journals. And as a result of that, I've really started to think about the peer review process and what it means and how complicated it is and how we do feedback in academia, because you can think of peer review in lots of ways. And maybe we can start with your story because you want to talk about feedback.
Well, no. Can I just ask a question quick, like at the start of this? Okay. So what prompted this conversation? Because I'm feeling a little like a little sensitive here, because I will say I was invited to review an article by Science Education and I turned it down just because literally last week I was invited to review an article with Science Education, and I just by because of the other projects I have going on right now, I just don't have the time to do it and I dedicate the time and do it well. And so I said, yeah, I just can't fit it in right now. And so it was more from a standpoint. So for those of you who are out there, who don't participate in a peer review process or this is a mystery, the what happens is usually either for conferences or for journals, you know, you as if you're a scholar of some, you know, area, you sign up for different journals and say, hey, I'd be interested in participating. And I get invited all the time to review for different things because I know some people do an editing, or I've, done reviews for different, conferences and so on. So Science Education reached out because they were like, hey, we know this is an area of expertise that you have. And I just, because of the time frame, because it's a short term turnaround, which is great. But I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it at this time. And so it's an anonymous process. So I'll get an anonymous, if I'm reviewing an article, it's sent anonymously. So I don't know who's written it. I don't know the context it's in or how many authors or anything. It's a
It's
blind
blinded.
review.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
it's a
blinded.
blind review. And so you're just examining the actual quality of the work and the quality of the writing and trying to provide as good a feedback as you can on whether this thing deserves to be published. And if not, well, even if it deserves to be published, how can it be made better? How can it be improved?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes, so again, I mean, we've talked about variations of this in classroom
Yeah.
assessment, but there are two components, right, to a peer review. One component is the evaluative component, and the other component is the assessment component. And the giving the feedback falls in that second category, and people have varying degrees of quality, let's just say. I
Right.
mean, to add a little more detail to the process, so a manuscript comes into a journal, and then they try and find three reviewers for every manuscript. So that the idea of three is that if you had two, you might have a tie, and with three, you've always got a tiebreaker. So if there's one person who thinks it's great and one person who thinks it's not great, and then you got a third voice to sort of help you make a decision there. And then those reviews are people are solicited, and they do their reviews. The reviews come in, and then the editor, one of the editor's roles is to read the reviews and the manuscript and sort of give the author guidance to say, you know what, this is clearly not going to work in our journal. Thanks very much, but maybe you need to find a different place for it. Or to say, well, pay attention to reviewer one and not so much to reviewer two because of X, Y, and Z, and here are the things you need to change. And if you change those things, then we'll publish them. So there is a feedback process that is overseen by the editor of the journal. But we're in a situation now, just not just science education, but I think this is a universal academic problem, that people are not willing to do reviews nearly so
Right.
much. So your story is pretty common. And so it can be a real struggle. And the main struggle with that is, I mean, it makes review times longer because people won't review. It also means that you can assign three reviewers to review a paper and only two of them do it, and they give you totally opposite points of view, and now you're really stuck. You've got this problem where, okay, I've only got these two reviews. What do I do with that? And it's a complicated time right now because that means that things don't get published,
Right.
and that's not good for the field if things are slow to get published.
Well, I think that the challenge is it's largely invisible work. And that's like if I have like I have two big writing projects coming up in April, and if I can dedicate time to that and to my teaching roles, because I have like student papers and all that stuff I know are coming in because it's the end of the semester. It's like, how can I fit in those things that are much more visible versus something that is largely invisible? Because the only person who really knows that I am doing that work is the editor and me. And while it's work I value because I learn from the process of reading good research or even bad research. I learn from the process, right? And so it is something that is valuable for me as a scholar. However, there are much more visible things that I have to do and or want to do. And so that's, I think, there's a part of it that's a really intrinsic, altruistic thing that largely goes unseen.
Yeah,
And
well, and the other piece that makes that complicated is the journal is making money, and it is not making money for either the editors or the reviewers,
right?
Or for that matter, the people who are publishing in the journal, right? So it is a very fraught activity, right? I mean, this idea of peer review goes way back in science, to the early days of trying to figure out, like, well, how do we decide if a piece of research is something that has merit, is believable, is deserving of being shared with the entire community? And that, you know, there used to be, and there still are, informal ways that that happens. But peer review was developed in science as a way to formally instantiate that process, to say, look, if we want to know if something's valuable or not, what we need to do is get some other people who are not involved in doing the work to look at the work, examine it, and decide whether it is rigorous, whether it meets the standards of the field, whether it's making a real contribution, which is to say it's new information to the field. And if all those criteria are met, then it's worth publishing. And if those criteria are not met, then it shouldn't be published. But it's gotten very complicated.
But I've seen the other side of it, and I've seen the other side of it, like, very recently. So let me, like, talk a little bit about my experiences.
Talk about the feedback bit.
Yeah, so friend of the show, Leslie Gates, and I have a manuscript that we wrote almost a year ago now.
Yeah.
And it is – we've talked about, you know, some of the research that we have going on right now, where she and I are working on advocacy as it relates to teachers and educators. We're using that broad – educator role, because lots of people can serve as advocates. And so the first article we have in this, you know, series of articles we have planned sat in review for a solid 8 months, seven months, sitting with the editor and having not moved to reviewers, because I don't think they could find reviewers to review the article.
Yep. That's probably it.
Oh, Leslie and I are like, okay, what do we want to do? Because it was the what we thought was a really good disciplinary home for it.
Yeah.
Because we were like trying. I mean, that's one of the challenges when you do work, is that you want to find, okay, like, what's the right place to publish this work? Because not everything, like, is gonna, like, I couldn't publish this in Science Education because it's not really sciencey. And choosing between different science journals is even a thing, like, because, like,
sure,
you could say, okay, this is more science education because it publishes this kind of work versus another journal which publishes this kind of work. And so you really have to do some investigation. And so for a while, I would say, you know, maybe, I don't know, like 2 or 3 weeks, we were just like, had this journal article that we were just like, okay, this manuscript that we're like, what are we going to do with? And I came across something that somebody else had published in this journal, Action in Teacher Education. And I didn't even know about this journal. I guess it's tied with the Association for Teacher Education, ATE.
Yeah.
And which I've presented at virtually, but not actually attended. And it was not the same kind of work that we're doing, but it was similar enough that I went, hey, this could be a possibility, because this is, you know, it was one, it was qualitative work, and that's the kind of work we were doing. Yeah. Two, it was focused directly on teacher education. Yeah. I mean, that's the other challenge. And three, like, the writing was very similar to the type of writing we were doing. And so I was like, this could be a really good home for it. Mm-hmm. So we submitted in January to this journal and almost got feedback from the editor within like a week that said, we've advanced it to reviewers.
Mm-hmm.
And they advanced it to 4 reviewers, not 3, 4.
Yeah.
And within like maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we had gotten very detailed feedback from all 4 reviewers.
Nice.
Now, it was a revise and resubmit, and we could talk a little bit about that. But the feedback was so strong that it was something where we're like, wow, this is really helping us rethink what we're doing and helping us move this to the next level. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, hey, you know, this doesn't have merit. It was like, hey, have you thought about this? Because this is important. And we're like, oh, we hadn't thought about that. We should probably do that. And so in a lot of ways, it wasn't like rewriting it, but it was just digging deeper. And that to me was, and I actually blogged about this recently because it was such a unique experience to get that kind of feedback from somebody. Like it's the kind of feedback you try to provide or I try to provide. And I've been on the opposite end with your feedback, so I know what that's like too, is that you try to provide feedback to your students that, helps them grow and helps their work improve and helps them learn in the process. And oftentimes it's a lot of gatekeeping from, reviewers for articles. This was not that. This was not evaluative. It was absolutely feedback for growth, feedback for, it was assessment. It was really good assessment where, and I, when I read it, I went through and I immediately texted Leslie. I'm like, this feedback is awesome. It is awesome. And like, it is completely, now, are we, is it gonna, like, we're wrapping up our revisions and, can resubmit it probably the next week or so, with the hopes of, getting it in. But I will say that it's a stronger work. It's stronger work coming out of this than it was going in.
Yeah, and certainly that's the process that you hope for,
Yes.
is that that happens. I mean, I think what I'll say too is one of the other challenges to this is the number of manuscripts. So
Yeah.
the journal, the Science Education Journal, our a colleague, current colleague of mine, Greg Kelly, used to edit this journal, probably almost 20 years ago now, 15 to 20 years ago. And back when he was editing the journal, they got somewhere around 200 manuscripts submitted a year. And right now, I think the journal is receiving somewhere between 700 and 800 manuscripts a year.
Wow.
So, and part there's lots of reasons for that. One of which is the globalization of the research enterprise. Like it is increasingly the case that, many countries are trying to submit articles into American journals, and particularly China and India, which have large populations of folks, are now being encouraged by their systems to publish in American journals. So, the process has changed a lot. I think also you can see it in the United States that there's been more and more pressure on smaller and smaller institutional, faculty at smaller and smaller institutions to publish in bigger peer-reviewed journals. So there's this, it's sort of like what happened to kindergarten in K-12. Like the pressure, the academic pressure is being spread all over now, and so more and
Right.
more people feel like they need to submit. And I think one of the things that we've been thinking about related to this is, I think the impact of that, or one of the impacts of that that I've seen, is journals are less and less a conversation and more a bean counting
Yeah.
operation. And I think one of the things is to try and figure out how to stop that, because I think the purpose of peer review and the is to have the community be in conversation about what is valuable, what's important, what kind of work do we want to see, what is helping our field move forward as a research enterprise. And when it starts becoming just like, well, I have three peer-reviewed journal articles this year in journal A, B, and C, well, now it's not a conversation. It's just a dumping ground. And I think we have to be wary of that it's not, I guess what I'm trying to say is that these articles shouldn't be independent of each other. There should be a relationship. You were talking about making choices about which journals to publish in. Well, part of that is like, what conversation do I want to be in? Do I want
Right.
to be in a conversation with the people who are doing this kind of work or that kind of work? And but curating that is part of an editor's job. But starting to think about how do you communicate that and also create an infrastructure to support that, I think is something that we're interested in. Like, how do we make peer review more like what you're describing, right? Which is about feedback. And part of what that feedback does is it shapes the paper so it fits the conversation of the journal better, right? Because it's like, well, here are some things that we as a community of scholars care about, and you have talked about some of those, but we'd like you to go a little deeper in these areas because that will bring you into conversation with the pieces that are already in the journal. So I think trying to do that is hard, but feels really important.
Yeah. I can't imagine what it's like to have 700 submissions.
Yeah.
And knowing on the other end from like the things I've reviewed, sometimes they're really good and a lot of times they're not.
They're not, right.
And
And
so,
they're not for a whole bunch of different kinds of
sure.
reasons, right? But yeah,
Right.
it's true.
And so, because the thing that somebody's interested in, and the thing they're interested in publishing and sharing may not be the focus of the science education journal, right?
Right.
And it may be like not really strong research.
Yeah.
And so, but you're right. I come from an institution that's large has largely been a teaching institution for the last 15, 20 years that I've been there, right?
Yeah.
But there is an increased focus on publishing in high-tiered journals,
Yep.
and also getting grant work and doing all the stuff
Yep.
that's really far removed from, the rest of my experiences at this
Yeah.
institution. And so that's not why I'm doing this kind of work. I mean, I could largely just sit back and just hang out if I wanted
Yeah.
to. It's
Right.
just work that I'm interested in and work I'm passionate about. But I know that there's pressure for publishing with some of the junior colleagues. And so they're like, okay, well, I got to get things out there. And some of it is just not ready for prime time yet. And it's
Right.
just not ready to, get into those types of, but they're putting it out there because it's really important to get lots of stuff done, right? It's
Yeah.
really important, which also comes back to if that's the bar and that's the expectation for our junior faculty. And then who's doing the reviewing? Like if they're like, we're just going to do like, 'cause I did much more reviewing as a junior faculty member than I do now, only because of the nature of the work that I'm doing. And like before I
Yep.
was like, I really want to learn what's like getting published. And so I was doing lots of conference reviews, doing lots of, article reviews for, different journals. I'm doing less of that now because of the nature of the work I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think these are, it's complicated. And the other thing that, this is sort of a thing that we've talked about in other contexts too, but like academia prepares you very narrowly for the job that you're going to do. And one of the things that it often doesn't do very well is prepare you to do peer review.
Yeah.
And it certainly doesn't prepare you to do editorial work in the sense of how do you take three peer reviews and write up a consensus document that takes up the reviews and makes a clear statement about what the author should do as they move forward. I mean, that means because there isn't a lot of support to help people learn that stuff, that the quality of that work is very uneven. Like, some journal reviewers don't know how to do a good review, and they spend all their time like listing out the typos that they found, which is like
But
that.
not the stuff that you need.
No, because the journal does that. Even if it, even if that were something maybe in the old days that needed to be done, now the journal takes care of all that. Like not the editors, the journal itself. They'll make sure there's no typos. They'll clean up all those grammatical mistakes and all that stuff. So what we really want is what you got from your review. We really want people to say, what is the substance of this? Is this a contribution to the field? Was it well executed? Did they is there are there alignments between the framework that they use and the data they collect and the conclusions that they come to? Like that's what we really need. We need expertise like that to read these things and say, okay, I don't need to write 50 pages. I need to write one page of high quality, focused feedback that is about the substance of the paper, not about, you should change this word to that word. Like that's super unhelpful because well, for lots of reasons, but
Well,
that is not typically what you get.
I would say there is a dearth in feedback across the boards,
Yep.
regardless of where you are and what you're doing. There's and some of it is because people don't we don't have like coming back to the apprenticeship of observation, right? We don't
Yeah.
have a really good standard of what because we haven't gotten it in our roles as students. We don't know how to do it in our roles as educators. We also don't know how to do that with each other in just general, right? We don't know how to say, hey, Scott, you know, when you did this, if you could do this a little bit better next time, or here's something that would be more helpful for me or whatever. Providing feedback to each other is just something we're all, maybe it's a vulnerability thing. I don't know. But, and then when you move to other things, whether it's the role as a reviewer for articles or conferences or something, we don't know what that looks like. We don't know what it looks like to do it well. And so we just keep propagating it. More bad feedback, bad feedback.
Well, and I think, I agree with that. And also, it's our response to feedback. Like, you know, one of the things I think I hear a lot is, you know, people get angry or frustrated with the feedback they get on a paper. Oh, these people didn't understand the thing or the, and I've done it myself. I'm not, you know, I'm not in a glass house and I understand that I'm casting stones, but I think, you know, trying to, on the other side of this, receive the feedback in a way that, like, look, I wrote this paper. Somebody who has some level of expertise read it and didn't understand what I was trying to accomplish. Well, that isn't on them entirely, at least. It's at least partly on me. So I need to take that up and really try and think about what I can do with that. And you know, I mean, journalists have experimented with all sorts of, you know, different ways to approach this. You know, like you were talking about blinding before, and there's ways to make things more blind and there's ways to make things less blind. And some journals experiment with both ends of that to try and see if it improves the quality of the feedback. You know, if you know who the reviewer is that's reviewing your paper and they know you, that's a very different situation than if you're submitting into a journal and they have no idea who you are and you have no idea who they are. So if we're moving towards the idea of thinking of journals as a conversation, do we want a more open process for review? But what does that do to the level of critique? Because you know, people are less and less, you know, I mean, I think maybe this is not generational. Maybe this is just the way it goes. Cause I'm always wary of people saying like kids today, but, it does seem like, it's harder to give negative feedback now that people really don't take it well. I don't know if this is a grade inflation thing or a whatever thing, but it is much harder to give strong, especially critical feedback to people, as they don't tend to take it well. They tend to take it in a way that makes them very angry and sometimes can be not awesome, their responses. So how do you walk this tightrope of like, we want high quality things. I mean, the acceptance rate in these journals is low, right? Like I think science ed's somewhere around 10-11%. So it's very difficult to get a manuscript published. And for all these reasons, right? There's hundreds and hundreds of manuscripts. There's the review process is long. Sometimes it takes, you know, I've had articles that took more than 2 years to go from the time I initially submitted them to the time that they got published or more. And that's a long time. Like if we want to think about research being what cutting edge, what's happening, you know, from the time the manuscript submitted to the time it's published being 2 years, that's crazy, right? Yeah. Because whatever work was done to get to that manuscript took probably a year before that. So you're talking about from the time you start doing data collection to the time that there's something out there about that data can be 3, 4, 5 years or more. And that is an eternity, especially in some fields. Like, it's really, really a challenge.
Well, I want to come back to the being positioned to accept feedback.
Yeah.
And I think some of it is like the like timing, right? Some of it is this idea of, hey, this was something I submitted 2 years ago.
Right.
And it's taking the editor and reviewers.
Yeah.
2 years to respond and give me feedback on this. And that is not an exaggeration because there are some journals out there that getting that kind of feedback can be that time consuming.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think some of it comes from. But I think it's the it also is due to the fact that everything is getting ramped up in terms of how important this stuff is, right? Like it is Now, if someone doesn't get an A in a class because of all of the things that are built around it, it's now such a high pressure thing. If
Yeah.
I don't get submit, I don't get accepted to this journal, that means I'm probably not going to get promoted, or I'm not going to get reappointed, or I'm probably
Exactly.
not going to be able to keep my job or whatever.
Yep.
And so we've dialed up the pressure on all of this stuff that I don't know if it's necessarily that people are more sensitive to feedback. It's just that the climate and environment in which the feedback is happening and the work is happening is so much different than it was. Like it, and so if it's like, oh, in my, my days, back in the day, back in my days,
Back in the good old days.
but I think that there was a difference in terms of you could be somebody who's working in an academic or a scholarly place and doing scholarly work, and it was a slower process. Like there's a article, there's a book out that I read a handful of years ago called The Slow Professor. And there was
Yes, great
a,
book.
it is a great book. And that is, I think, captures the best of what is the change or the evolution in academics in the world, right? As things happened very slowly before, like you could cook something and it would take a long time to cook and it was okay. But now we have these, you have to have a meal in 20 minutes. And so we're like, and what does that do to nutrition, right? What does that do to, because like you can only fit it in a certain amount of time. Now, granted, we still cook long meals and we still do that. But I think there's a culture or an expectation that because we've got to take kids to soccer games, we got to take them to the softball mats, we got to take them to band practice, we got to take them to 100 things that kids have to do because that's how they're going to get into college and that's how they're going to get to scholarships and blah, blah, blah. We've dialed up everything.
No, agreed. And in research, the way that ends up playing out is, there are more journals, and those journals are publishing more articles, and so it gets harder and harder to stay up. And then, in the old days, back in my day, this actually predates me mostly, but you would get a physical copy of the journal in your mailbox, and usually people would either read it or they'd at least look through it to see if there was anything interesting there. Well, that is completely changing now, right? Like I think it's only a matter of time. Not even I think. I know it's only a matter of time. I don't know how long that time will be before there will be no such thing as an issue in these journals. There will just be when the article is ready, it's published. It already is the case that when an article is published on what has been called early view or some version of that, where it just as soon as the article is ready, it goes up on the website and then it waits to get into an issue. Well, it is now the case that that early view is the publication date. So if it went up in early view in December of 23, but came out in an issue in March of 24, the actual publication date
Has switched.
is 2023. So that already is an indicator that
Wow.
we're moving that direction. And it also, I mean, there are advantages to that. One of the disadvantages to the old style of publishing is we had limits on the number of articles and pages that we could publish. And there's no reason to have a limit, right? I mean, it's all bits. So having a journal that publishes, 70 articles a year versus one that publishes 100 articles a year, there is no real cost for that. It's a couple extra lines on a website. It's a PDF. It's nothing. So expect that to change too, that there is going to be upward pressure on journals to publish more articles, which may increase the acceptance rate. Who knows? Depending. I mean, right now.
But you still have to have people review it.
Right. Exactly. And this, that part is a bottleneck, and you do wonder, like, what's next? Like, are we going to have AI do the initial reviews of all the? So it's like, okay, before we send it out for peer review, we're going to run it through an AI to say, does this article make a new contribution to the field, and is it in conversation with the other articles in this journal? Because it's easy to upload all the articles in that journal for the whole history of the journal and ask an AI whether it fits. And then if it fits, then you send it out to peer review to see if it's good or whatever it is. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. That's going to be a hard hard sell for people. I mean, I think it's going to make things easier, but if we're just going to have, because you know where I stand on AI. I'm a skeptical proponent for it, but I think that is work that we still need humans to do. Not because AI can't do the work, is that we want humans to do the work.
But again, I think, if you look at what point do we say we're more interested in reducing review times than we are in whether AI is contributing to the process or not, right? Because if I said to you that article that took 2 years to publish, we can now publish it in 3 months because we do the initial review through AI, would you say yes or no? I don't know.
Well, I mean,
Like
that's
you
the.
say, it's complicated and
There are going
difficult.
to be people who are going to be engaging. There are going to be scholars, and this is a larger conversation in scholarly communities. Like, what's the role of AI in scholarship?
Yeah, and
Like,
publishing.
in publishing, in not just publishing, also analysis. You know, like in analyzing data, in examining literature for literature reviews, the whole thing is being re-examined. And so, if we have AI supporting the work of crafting literature reviews and doing a theoretical frameworks and doing analysis and writing discussions, and then we have AI, reviewing the stuff too and seeing if then it's just AIs talking to AIs, and it's like, well, what then? What's the point?
Well, and one wonders then in that scenario how you get anything novel. I mean,
Yes.
one of the difficulties with AI is it's very good at doing derivative work, but it's not particularly good, at least yet, at doing truly novel, interesting. Well, not I don't want to say interesting because it produces a very interesting results, but not in the way that I think we traditionally think of, especially in research, right? Like, in what way is this a new contribution to our understanding of the way the world works? Well, that is seems like, at least for now, a difficult thing for AI to produce, but
Well,
certainly it's going to be something we're going to have to grapple with as editors, is how do we see the role of AI in doing reviews, in producing manuscripts that we know we're going to get that have AI in them, and to varying degrees. I mean, it's going to be a real challenge.
does science education have a disclaimer that authors have to like say, hey, I have no AI?
It's a good question. I don't actually know the answer to that. My
Because,
guess is yes, there's some version of it, but I don't know how strong it is.
because I, you know, one of the things I, when we submitted, I submitted this, article, or I don't remember, Leslie did. One of us submitted it, and there was a disclaimer there. And I use Grammarly, which is an AI tool. It's not, it basically, it's catching all of my, if inefficiencies mostly. Like I'm not a bad writer. I'm just an inefficient one. Like sometimes I'll throw lots of, qualifiers in, or like, and it's like, hey, you can replace these seven words with these two, and it's just like, oh yeah, that reads much better. And so is that an AI something that I have to disclaim? Because it's not helping me. They're still my ideas. They're all my ideas. I don't know,
Well,
right?
no, I agree with you. I think they are, but I think you can hear the slippery slope in there, right?
Yes,
Which
I
is,
can.
as soon as the words start getting changed via AI, well, at what point does your idea get transitioned into at least a hybrid idea that was
Sure.
informed by AI? Yeah, I
Well,
mean,
that's the question then becomes like, okay, well, what's the difference between that and the editor feature or the grammar checker or whatever? In because like it like the passive voice, the like the number of passive voice it's that editor that the Microsoft editor catches, something I was a pretty, I did that a lot. I did a lot of passive voice, and I've learned to like from doing that I don't do it as much anymore, but it still catches it. So like, and good for it. Like passive voice is like probably one of the worst things you can do as a writer.
Yeah, but I mean, it also has a function in the world, right? I mean,
Sure.
so that's the tricky thing too, is at what point, is it changing your writing potentially for the worse because it's trying to conform you to the norm as opposed to allowing you to write the way that expresses your voice? I mean, certainly you can imagine it being very different, say, for poetry than it would be for prose, right? So, an AI making suggestions about, grammar suggestions about your poetry could be really bad news because, like, oh, you should replace these words with these other words. It's like, no, the
There
whole
go,
point is
yeah,
those words.
right.
You
There
need
goes your
those words.
haiku. There goes
Yeah,
your,
exactly.
yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, hey, none of us expected, neither of us expected that we'd be talking about haikus or praise,
Right.
prose versus,
Yeah,
poetry.
but I think, peer review is such a central part of how we
Yeah.
decide. I mean, people in schools talk about research-based whatever, right? Research-based curriculum, research-based decision making. But what does that actually mean? Well, peer review is a huge piece of what that means, and I do think it's important to think about it.
It's gold standard research. Like that's the like the highest, like I mean really
Well, gold
it should be.
standard, yes. Gold standard has become experimental research. That has been the way that
Right.
gold standard has been described
Yeah,
by, say,
I
like the White Why What Works Clearinghouse, which is a governmental clearinghouse of research, like, yeah, of educational research.
Right.
Yes,
So
it
they
says like experimental is the gold standard,
right.
which,
Well,
yeah.
you and I have some reservations about that.
Yeah, it's a bit tarnished from our point of view, but
Yeah. But that's another episode. Or
that's
I think it
another
might
episode.
have been an episode.
Yeah, it probably
Yeah.
was an episode
All
already.
right. Peer review.
Peer review.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, there we go. So you got a joy?
Yes, I do have a joy. I recently celebrated a birthday. And
Congratulations.
thank you. Double Nichols, 55.
There you go.
Old guy. One of
Yep.
the things that I appreciated with this birthday is I had some family members share food via mail. All right.
Okay.
So
Yeah.
one, like there's services that do this. I don't
Sure.
know. Like Gold Belly is one that does this.
Okay.
So what they'll do is they'll take some regional food that and partner with that like a company that does it. So I got lobster rolls
Oh, nice.
from someplace in Maine.
Yeah.
And then I also so shout out to the lobster rolls because it's an awesome sandwich, all right? It is like
Is.
it's a great sandwich. If you've never had a lobster roll, put that on your list of things to do. Unless you're
For
allergic
sure.
to shellfish, then don't.
Then please don't.
Please do not. The other thing that someone sent me was Half Moon cookies.
Half Moon cookies. I do not know these.
So it is, half vanilla icing, half chocolate
Oh,
icing.
sure. I know what those are. Yeah.
So it's a Half Moon cookie, but there's a place in New York State called Holland Farms. They'll send these to you directly.
Okay.
And so there are vanilla ones and chocolate ones. So you get vanilla with the Half Moon icing on top and chocolate with the Half Moon. It's kind of like both are kind of cakey cookies.
Right.
So it's almost like a brownie if you get the chocolate one. Wow, I have just done some great eating this weekend because of the U.S. mail. So,
All right.
just cheers for, that joy that people have shared with me.
All right. Well, we'll look at Gold Belly
Yeah,
and
so check out Gold Belly or check out like or look around online because like Holland Farms, I think is it's a direct mail thing, so you can
oh
do that
yeah.
to,
Yeah,
yeah.
gold yeah, I'm looking at Gold Belly. There's all sorts
We,
of stuff in here.
yes, we sent stuffed cabbage to my father-in-law,
As you
some
do.
Hungarian stuffed cabbage
Sure.
for his birthday, which is a few weeks ago. And I've done my share of ordering muffalettas from the central grocery.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Yeah, you can get clam chowder from Pike's Place Market in San Francisco. I don't know if that's
Yes.
fun.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. You pick. Oh, look at that. Shortbread Society will send you millionaire shortbread tray. Those remind me of Ireland. Those. Okay. Now we're going down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, you are.
Okay.
Lots of eating. And
Lots
you
of
and I like
eating.
to eat. We do like to eat.
We do like to eat,
We
especially
share
good food.
some common traits.
Yes.
Eating is
Eating.
one.
Yes, it
Yes.
is. Yes, eating. Try it, people, if you haven't. It's worth it.
Yes. Joy for you.
Joy for me. So during my travels, I often download television shows to watch on the plane. And so I'm going to recommend something that's on Netflix that I watched the first season a while ago, and the second season I hadn't realized it had come out. But it's a documentary series called Abstract, and it focuses on different designers that do different kinds of work. So the new season has some really interesting folks who do different things. So I haven't seen the whole season yet, but there's like a costume designer. There's a person who designs. They say that they don't design toys. They design for play. There's one of the really interesting ones is a woman, Neri Oxman, is that right? At MIT Media Lab, who is focused on sort of bioarchitecture and experimenting with all sorts of sort of radical building materials and processes. It was really interesting. I mean, they're all really interesting. The costume designer was much more interesting than I was expecting it to be. So, it's an interesting show for if you're interested in design, and how things get made and how people who are really good at making things like do their work. I like that in general. I'm interested in seeing people who are good at things do the things that they're good at, because I think it reveals a lot about, well, what expertise is, if nothing else. But I'm willing to watch almost anything in that vein. So yeah, it's a great show, and I think there are 8 episodes in a season, and
Let's check that
they're
out.
about 45 minutes to an hour each. So yeah.
That sounds absolutely something in my wheelhouse. I'll have to
Yeah.
check it out. Yeah,
Yeah.
no doubt.
Abstract.
Abstract. Nice.
Yeah. All right.
All right. What episode was this? One something or another?
Yeah, it was one something or other. It was 180 diggity dig 186.
186. Look at
186.
that. Nice. Look at
Yep.
us.
Getting
All
close to
right.
200.
In 200. Yeah. What's 14 episodes away? Quick
Yep.
math right there.
There you go. Look at you.
Yeah.
Can you figure
Woo!
out what date it is that will be released?
Not at all.
Nope.
Yeah.
Okay,
All
perfect.
right.
All
Hey,
right,
well,
but
we'll
at
catch you
some
next
point
time.
in between.
We'll see you then.
Bye now.